Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 13, The Behavior of a Perfect Person, Text 31. Adhyatmi kadibhir dukkar abhimuk tasya karhi chit maratyasya kri ropanatayar Artai kamai kriyeta kim. Adyatmika adibi. Adyatmika adidaivika and adibodhika. Dukkhai. By the threefold miseries of material life. Avimuktasya, of one who is not freed from such miserable conditions, or one who is subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease. Karichit, sometimes. Martasya, of the living entity subjected to death. Kritra upanatai, things obtained because of severe miseries. Artai, even if some benefit is derived. Kamai, which can fulfill one's material desires. Kriyeta, what do they do? Kim, and what is the value of such happiness? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions, adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibodhika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One who is still subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Purport. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after laboring very, very hard, gets some material profit at the end of his life, he is considered a success, even though he again dies while suffering the threefold miseries, adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibodhika. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life, namely the miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to the difficulties imposed by society, community, nation, and other living entities, and miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances, from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. One works very hard, suffering the threefold miseries, and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of this benefit? Besides that, even if a karmi is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. I have even seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so that he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful and expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in great bereavement. Everyone was dying this way, and after one's mental condition is taken into account by the laws of material nature, he is given another chance to fulfill his desires in a different body. Material plans for material happiness have no value, but under the spell of the illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There are many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who died very miserably without deriving any practical value from their material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man never desires to work hard under the conditions of the threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment. Doesn't sound very sentimental, does it? Our philosophy is not sentimental. Oh, he died so nicely. He was so peaceful when he died. his life was successful. Adhyatmikadibhira dukara avimuktasya karichit vartasya kricha ropanar tar artai kamai kriyatakim. Materialistic activities are always mixed with the three kinds of miserable conditions, adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibodhika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. So the Bhagavatam, it is said, is supposed to try to open our eyes. Unfortunately, people, pashan api napashiti. Even you try to open their eyes, they can't see anything anyhow. Nor do people want to see things, and generally speaking, we've been trained not to see. We've been trained in a different way. For instance, most of what we're seeing is quite obvious conclusion, but because we've been mistrained, therefore we see something completely different. An example is from the Brahma Samhita, where our Lord Brahma says, Yatschaksha Esha Savita Sakala Grahanam Raja Samasta Suramurte Ashesha Teja Yasyagaya Brahmati Kala Chakra Samrita Kala Chakra Govindam Adi Purusham Tamahang Bhujami. So Lord Brahma, he doesn't read modern newspapers, so he's not so fooled. Nor did he get a degree from a college. But still he has real education because he learned from the Vedas. Krishna spoke the Vedas to him, and therefore he has actual knowledge. And he says here, it's Chaksha Esha Savita Sakala Grahana, that of all the different planets, the sun is the Raja, is the king. And why is it the king? Because since time immemorial, it's giving off unlimited heat and light. We all understand the value of light, because without light we couldn't see, and without heat we couldn't live. Now, the material scientists take it for granted, or at least some of them, that the sun has just come about by accident, like everything else has come about by accident. Of course, accidents don't come about by accident either. If you're driving in a car and another car hits you and the police come to investigate what happened and they ask what happened and the driver that hit you said, oh, it's nothing, it was just an accident. Just happened by accident. Now the police want to know what actually is the cause of the accident. They don't accept, oh, it was just an accident. Oh, okay, we don't have to do anything. It just came about by accident. The car came out of nothing and hit you. By accident. So even accidents have a cause behind them. What to speak of everything else, which is obviously not accidental. So Lord Brahma says, it is not accidental that the sun is full of infinite effulgence and is able to supply exactly the amount of heat and light that this world needs in order to survive, the people in this world need in order to survive. Matter of fact, throughout the universe, the sun is performing the service of providing heat and light for all living entities in at least a good part of the universe. Not all of it, but a good part of it. And exactly what's necessary to sustain life. Now in India, sometimes they tie a bull by its nose. They put a little ring around the nose. And they tie a rope to a pole. And the service of the bull is to walk around the pole, carrying a very heavy weight, which is crushing grains. In this way, the bull is considered quite useful. And the weight that it's pulling around the pole is so heavy that it would take 50 men in order to try to pull it. Now, the bull is so strong, it can do the work of 50 men. But it's because it's tied by its nose to a pole, it cannot move 1 inch beyond the pole or beyond the rope. Similarly, although the sun is full of infinite effulgent, Sambrita Kala Chakra is exactly in an orbit. Every day it rises at a certain time, and every day it sets at a certain time. It's predictable. They have charts where you can predict where the sun's going to be in thousands of years. We don't know where we're going to be tomorrow, but we know where the sun's going to be exactly in 100 years from now. Now, with all our intelligence, we don't know where we're going to be. So whoever created a sun full of infinite effulgence, hundreds and thousands of times bigger than this Earth planet, how did it come about that they happened to come, be put in exact orbit? If the sun moved a little closer to the Earth, or the Earth a little closer to the sun, everything here would be burnt. And if the sun moved a little further away, or the Earth moved a little further away, everything would be frozen. So how is it that there's a perfect arrangement? So in spite of the fact either the sun's moving around the universe or the Earth is moving around the universe, whatever it may be, somehow or another, in spite of their movements, either both of them or one of them, everything is perfectly arranged for our living here. Now, according to the scientists, we're the only people in the universe. And therefore, Brahman never spoke Brahma Samhita, because he never existed. And therefore, his knowledge, his inference that there's a perfect arrangement, that the sun's moving around in the universe, giving us exactly the amount of heat and light we need, doesn't exist, because Brahma doesn't exist. And therefore, his knowledge doesn't exist. We don't have to worry about the fact that the sun is in a perfect orbit, because it's us just by an accident. And all these other planets are all accidents, so no one lives there. There's no Indra, there's no Chandra, there's no other living entities. And all the UFOs or whatever they are, they're just for science fiction books. And the Vedas are all mythology because we know everything. And if you don't believe we know everything, then you're a demon, you're a terrorist, you're a potential, who knows what you're potentially. You don't accept our absolute authority because we come from a disciplined succession of great leaders like Genghis Khan and others. Darwin, Freud, they knew everything. And we know everything because they know everything, knew everything. So we may imagine like that, and when we look at the sun, we think, oh, it's just some ball of fire, just happened to get thrown there by some accident, came out of nothing, and luckily it wound up in a perfect orbit for millions and billions of years, just by chance, accident. So when we eat food, just by accident, there happen to be perfect arrangements that the food is chewed, it's swallowed, it's churned, it's digested, it's assimilated, and the unwanted parts are eliminated. All by accident, inconceivable accident. Of course, the scientists, they can't even conceive. They don't even know perfectly how this accident came about or how the accident is going on. They can't duplicate it, even to the smallest degree. Now, if someone can invent a machine by which you put grass on one end, and at the other end comes milk, it would be a very valuable machine. But the scientists can't do that. They cut the grass, but they just throw it away. But we have a machine. Or Krishna has a machine, he's invented a machine that eats grass in one end and out comes milk. It's called the cow. So Krishna is a much better inventor than the so-called scientists who are claiming there is no inventor. But they can't explain how the cow is eating grass and then producing milk. How a woman, as soon as she gives birth, has milk to feed the baby. She has milk in her breast to feed the baby. But before that, she doesn't. So how did this all come about? Did it actually come about by evolution? Is that the explanation? So why aren't things further evolving? Why are things devolving? If everything is evolving, then why is it we have all separate species of life? Why are there no missing links? Why can't they find the missing link? Because in spite of all their endeavors to dig into the earth, all they find is the same thing over and over again. Of course, they can juggle things and try to confuse everyone, claiming that there's a progression. When I went to high school, they showed us the book on evolution. And there you had the little horse, and then the bigger horse, and then the bigger horse, and the bigger horse. And they said, this is proof that the horses are getting bigger. They evolved and bigger. What they didn't tell you is that they found the little horse and a strata on above the big horse. In other words, further you get into the earth's crust, that would indicate an earlier existence. Well, it just so happens the bigger horse is in an early existence than the little horse. So how do they explain it? That the horse decided to take a break and become smaller for a few thousand years and then decided to, you know, get bigger again the next. But they don't want to explain that because they just juggle the whole thing to make it appear that they actually know what they're talking about. And when you're 10 years old, you actually believe them. So the point is the universe, if one looks at it with a little intelligence, can see that it's being created, it's being maintained, and it's being destroyed in an orderly, systematic way, not by accident. And therefore, when they're talking about here, Pashanapi na Pashati, people are going to die. If you tell people that, there's like one devotee I know, he asked his mother, dear mother, why do people die? And her response was, are you feeling bad today? Are you sick? In other words, people don't know the answer, nor do they want to think about the answer. They want to ignore it. Like a rabbit. If a rabbit is attacked by a bigger animal, then the rabbit's its response, if it can't run away, it just closes its eyes and thinks, oh, it's gone away. There's no more enemy anymore. I'm safe. So people want to close their eyes. They're growing old. They're becoming diseased. But they're afraid. I might even die. There's some rumor. We saw other people die. But I know I'm a nice person if I take my vitamins every day, I do my exercise, or take my medicine, whatever it may be, then maybe I can live forever. The scientists will save me. But the scientists themselves are dying. The doctors themselves, in America, the shortest for a profession, the profession that has people have the shortest duration of life are in the medical field. They can't even save themselves, what to speak of anyone else. So, people want to ignore a death. Or, if it's presented to them, it's presented to them in a way that simply invokes fear. That if you don't surrender to us, you're going to die. If you don't take our medicine, you don't, you know, take our job, you don't surrender to us, then you're going to starve and die, or get sick and die. So fear is that's their business, is propagating fear of death. As if people if they take shelter of these people and they're going to be saved from death, but they're not going to save themselves from death. The daughter of Stalin was present when Stalin was dying, and she points out that Stalin, right before he died, he looked up in the air and he was pointing, you know, to people who were coming to get him. So people were coming to get him, and they got him. In spite of the fact he was controlling so many people, he was putting so many other people into misery and death, but eventually they got him. He also had to meet the same destiny that everyone else he thought he was controlling had to meet also. So people may accumulate wealth and they may become brainwashed into thinking they're going to stay here forever. If they get enough money, the scientists will save them. They'll put them into ice and preserve their body. And in 10 million years from now, they'll defrost them and they'll wake up again when they got the cure, whatever disease they had. Even Lenin's body is still, I think, in Lenin Square. Maybe they're hoping he'll wake up one day. So this is called madness. People are seeing everywhere, they're ahani, ahani, bhutani, gacchanti, amalayam, shesha, stavra, ichchanti, kemas, jayam, atakparam. Everywhere, when Maharaj Yudhisthira was asked by his father, Yamaraj, who has great experience of death and punishment, was asked, what is the most amazing thing Yamaraj asked him in the form of a yaksha? Yudhisthira Maharaj said, ahani, ahani, bhutani. Every day people are saying so many living entities are entering into the jaws of death. But those who stay behind, they think they're going to live forever. So people are not preparing for death, they're preparing to avoid death. The whole modern society is simply trying to escape the idea of dying. Even if they think they can't avoid death, they want to escape the thought of death. Because they think at the time of death, everything is zero. And they see they're growing old, they're becoming diseased, people are dying. So more and more intoxication, not only by the normal intoxication, heroin and other types of marijuana, whatever. In one state in America, now they've made all drugs legal. Heroin, cocaine, everything. There's nothing illegal in that particular state anymore. Because people are in so much anxiety, either they'll rebel or you have to intoxicate them. Dull them so that they become like a stone and a stone doesn't talk back to you. Or give them entertainment. Give them movies, $1 billion, $2 billion movies to catch up their imagination so they can live in some other world other than the world that they're in. Give them sports. Let them imagine they become a hero in some sports match. Just dull them down and distract them so that they don't really see that their leaders are not solving the real problems. They're just distracting them from the real problems. Let them chase after money. Let them chase after women. Let them chase after fame. And when they get it, they still grow old, become diseased, and die, and end up in frustration by losing everything. If you have nothing, then you have nothing to lose. You can die peacefully because you're not attached to anything. And the more you get in the material world, the more you become attached to it, then the more frustration you have when you're going to lose it. If people lose one pen, they look for the whole day searching after it. But what happens if they have, you know, a house and a family and millions of dollars or whatever, and they're about to leave their body? Not only do they lose all those things, but they lose their body that they love and cherish and protect and serve all for so many years. So this society where they're involving people in illusion, teaching people to be an illusion, demanding that they be an illusion, providing all the ability to be illusion, is a soul-killing society and simply is working for the detriment of all the living entities within this universe, in this world. Not working for their benefit, working for their spiritual destruction and therefore ultimately a miserable life in this life and a miserable life in the next lifetime or lifetimes. So this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to distribute at least basic knowledge that you can't avoid old age. No matter how much you put on makeup or cologne or whatever else, or how many operations you have, you're still going to go old. You're still going to become diseased. You're still going to die, and you're going to have to, like every other living entity, take birth again and simply carry your karma with you. That's all you're going to be able to carry. You can't carry, you know, your favorite pet with you wherever you're going. Oh, Fifi loves me. She'll come with me wherever I go. Oh, all you get is your karma. When Narada Muni told one hunter, he said, why are you doing this? He said, because of my family, they love me. Oh, really? Do you know that you're going to have to suffer horrible reactions for what you're doing in your next lifetime? He said, yes, but my family loves me. So Narada Muni said, if they really love you, then certainly they'll share with your reactions that you're getting for maintaining them. Of course they will. They love me so much. So Narada Muni went to the wife. He said, well, go to the wife and ask her if you'll be willing to share their sinful reactions for my activities to provide for you. So he went to his wife and said, will you share with me the sinful reactions for my activities? She said, no way. I get the money, you get the reactions. Then he went to the children. And they said, no way, Dad, you know. You're my father. We love you for what you give us, but we don't, you know, you can keep your sinful reactions. And then he went to his dog, the last resort, the one who thought loved him the most, and his dog bit him after telling him. So this idea that I can do what I, you know, in order to, for love, society, friendship and love, I'll do anything I'm willing to sacrifice because they love me. Yeah, they love our sacrifice, but they may not love ourselves personally so much as we think. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
So much regarding this evolution theory, which is prominent in this modern society. And Prabhupada wanted that devotees try to prove that this is nonsense, you know, by establishing Bhaktivedanta Institute, Bhakti Swarup Damodara Goswami. Is there, what situation in ISKCON now regarding this academic way to prove, or, because Prabhupada has this idea, no? That the devotees who have this inclination academically, that they should put forward the Vedic knowledge in the academic way or something.
Yeah, they should.
But it's nothing.
Not that I know of. Nothing significant. I don't know. Yeah, it should be, but I don't know of anything significant. There's so much that could be done, but how much is being done is unknown to me. It's not being... If something is being done, it's unknown. Even, I think the Christians are doing much more than we are, where there's intelligent design is progressing. Mm-hmm. But... right now, that's all I can say. Anything else? All right, thank you very much. Grandaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.